Welcome back, everyone, to Movie Geek and Proud, the show where there are no guilty pleasures in film. Fuck the haters and be proud of your taste. I'm your host, Rob, with another Rob's Rewind. This is where I rewatch a film in my collection and see if it holds up. To stay on the shelf, it has to score a 4 or above out of 5, or get tossed and traded for a store credit, figuratively anyway. Let's start the show.
Girl.
I've got the moves, baby.
Who are you? She's beautiful. She's impulsive. She's Madonna. And in 24 hours, she'll turn a mild-mannered corporate attorney into a wild-eyed fugitive from justice. All because she holds the key to a life he never expected. Madonna. Griffin Dunn.
Kiss me.
I've got the moves, baby. You got the motion.
Who's that girl?
Because it is the motion.
I've got the moves, baby. You got the motion. When we get together, we be causing a commotion.
That was really awesome, Ryan. No, that song brings back so much. It's so good. It's the opening credits. I love it. We are doing Who's That Girl, starring Madonna, and I'm here with Ryan to help me review this movie. Ryan, how are you doing? Welcome back for a second time now.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me back. I am thrilled to be talking about this movie, and I'm thrilled to be back on the show, your new format.
How is everything on your end? I understand that you are a couple of months into your own podcast as well.
Yes, highly, highly, highly inspired by Movie Geek and Proud and Brunch with the Hollowells. I have launched a podcast back in October. And a matter of fact, I have an amazing revolving co-host that comes on the show and joins me. So I'm very lucky.
Tell everyone about your show before we get started.
Oh, thank you so much. The show is called the Radical Retro Rewind Podcast, and I could not have made a harder title to say all those R's all together. Basically, 80s, 90s, and I guess I'll go as far as anything that's in the 2000s because it is retro-esque right now, and we talk about different TVs, movies, video games, cartoons, anything retro, and along with my brother David a lot of the times, and talk about them with the love and a little cringe sometimes.
No, well, I mean, yes, I do appear on the show a couple of times. I'm sure I'll do more in the future, but listening to episodes that I am not in, this is a very fun show. I actually learned a little bit about a little cartoon called Jem that I don't remember watching as a kid. So listening to them talk about it was so informative, and it also gives motivation to one day watch it someday. So yeah, check out his show. No, check out the show. It's actually cool. So let's get right to it. First thing I want to ask you, Ryan, is do you see Madonna as a comedian? And I don't mean like, haha, tell a joke on stage type funny. I'm talking about her acting and her, you know, charisma, her timing. Do you think she is a funny woman?
Okay, so aside from Madonna in real life, who, I know this because I am, my partner is a huge Madonna nut, expert, fanatic. She wants to be a stand-up comedian in real life, by the way. This is one of the things that she's been talking about for years. Yes, I think this is the perfect kind of movie for Madonna's acting. She does get better as the years go on. She's been in movies after this. But for the sake of this movie, her acting and her comedic timing fits well enough.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I do find her funny. I wouldn't look at her name and be like, oh, she's in this comedy, it's gonna be hilarious. But she does make me laugh. I loved her character in League of Their Own.
Oh, yes. And
you know, I mean, she's not a ha-ha funny person, but she made me laugh with her character in that. And she does in this movie, too. So Madonna plays this woman who is framed for a murder that she claims she did not commit. She is released on parole. Within one day, she uses that time to find evidence to clear her name and make sure that she is resolved of any kind of crime associated with her, which is murder. She uses the help of this gentleman who is assigned to make sure that she gets on a bus to Philadelphia, where she is from, to meet with her parole officer. And because she is who she is, he goes along for the ride, clearing her name. All right, so we watched this as a kid, right? I don't know how often you watch this movie. I watched this movie so much. I think it's because it was just a completely insane movie. It's just nothing but cartoonish hijinks. That's all it is. It's just them bouncing around like a pinball machine. And they do that for 90 minutes with a lot of wisecracks and one-liners and things like that.
And a matter of fact, it starts well enough with the cartoon with the opener, which I think fits that movie to a T. It's the perfect opener for this movie.
You know, that's the thing about it too. It's like back in the day, we always had some kind of sequence for the credits. That was a thing. You started the movie and you saw all of these credits, maybe a song attached to it, to get you hyped up before the movie starts. Now is just one of those things where it just starts and they do credits at the end. But back then you watched credits, right? And I love that we got the entire prologue as to why she's even in jail in the first place done.
Yes,
completely
yes.
Animated style. And I'll have some stuff about that towards the end of the episode, but I love that.
And honestly, it's thank God that they set it up like that too, because it does get a little confusing at some parts when she's explaining the story with the accent that she's using. So it's good that we get to see it like that in cartoon form playing out. But yes, but prior to this, when I think of who's that girl, I thought of three things. I don't know why, and not in this order. The cougar slash cat in the movie, Madonna eating a huge piece of wedding cake. I don't know, that always stood out in my head.
Okay.
And the character played by Griffin Dune in the tuxedo with his shirt open with the suspenders. This has stayed in my head since I was a child, so.
I definitely remember all three things for sure. When I remember this movie back in the day, I'll just go along with what you did. The three things that come up in my head: the opener animated sequence, Buck. I will always remember Buck.
Oh yes,
Buck is just stands out. And then one of my favorite sort of laugh out loud parts of this movie is the key that she has is thrown into one of the presents and it's being delivered to, you know, the bridesmaids and the bride or whatnot. And she runs out of the jewelry store. That whole sequence is amazing. But she runs out of the jewelry store and they notice the car has been stolen. And then there is a cab in front of them and there's a guy who's about to get in it. And what she does is just yell in his face as loud as possible.
Yep.
And startles him. And apparently this is enough to say that I'm stealing your cab. And all she says is thank you and hop into the cab. But it was just the way that she randomly just yelled in a guy's face. I just love that. And it makes me laugh so much.
The whole scene though with that, I wrote a note about that to bring that up. So I'm glad you brought that up. The whole scene with the key in the jewelry store is, like you said, a cartoon, because it happens so not only fast, the key literally flies across the room into a random box with a vase, and she just so happens to know it's going to be delivered to the bridal shower. But, and then, yeah, just the screaming, it's such a chaotic scene, but it's fun. It's a fun scene.
It is fun. And this is sort of one of those examples of you know, what this movie is just completely bonkers. Ryan, did you like this movie?
Yes. I will say I loved it more as a kid rewatching it. It comes back to you almost immediately when you're watching the movies. I was having the flashbacks of them jumping on the roof and like all these things that happened in this movie. And I'm like, oh my God. So yes, of course, I did love it a little better as a child. But anyone who knows me knows my taste is obscure and...
Well, that's the thing about this movie, because I, you know, I pride myself on having an obscure taste, and this is just one of those movies. Like, yes. I don't know how I would really describe anyone to about this movie or even give them reason to watch it, except to see Madonna do stuff that you would never see her do ever again.
Yeah, ever she's again. Very, especially nowadays, she takes herself very seriously.
Yeah, and you know, she really wanted this movie to work. She had just got off of a film, I think it was called Shanghai Surprise, and that was a drama. She did that with her husband at the time, Sean Penn, and it flopped. It did not do well. So she was
and
like
drama. There was drama on that set too, evidently. Lots of very fighting.
Lots of fighting. She wanted to do a comedy. She was, even though she didn't direct it, she got a close friends of hers to direct it, named James Foley. And I think a real big reason for that was though she could have a lot of creative control because they're so tight. You know, on set, she wanted to do everything as a perfectionist, which I think took a little bit out of the natural sort of side to this movie, is that you think she's kind of bonkers and crazy in this. She probably would have been a little bit less choreographed and had a little bit more charm maybe if she had just not tried to do everything so perfectly. But at the same time, she really wanted this movie to work, and unfortunately this was a flop as well. But it's bonkers. It's so crazy, and I love it. I just love it.
It's one of the films that only would work in the 80s.
Yes. And I don't know, this is probably such a huge reach, but watching her in this movie, especially with her outfit, she seemed like a female Pee Wee Herman to me.
Oh my God, 100%! That's like, in my notes!
No, really? Oh, that's 100%. So funny. No, honestly, just the whole entire big adventure scenario.
You stole like, my mind.
Everything is just so, like, anything could happen in this movie. And I think that's why I liked it. And with both characters, they're rebellious. They beat their own drum. Like, they seriously just do whatever they want, and they're confident in just being a weirdo. So Madonna, apparently, she studied a lot of like 60s like movies and films and things to kind of prepare on what kind of character she wanted. But like her whole design, like she demanded the tutu, the fishnet stockings and all of that. She demanded all of that. I liked her look. I don't know how New York that is. Is that a very East Coast thing, Ryan, do you think?
Well, especially in the 80s. And I mean, she created that look, honestly, especially with the leather jackets. Yes, New York leather jackets, but especially Madonna, she set that tone, and people were wearing those tutus and those leather jackets right after that movie because of her. And in New York, definitely.
Yeah. She is framed for a murder. The guy she was dating at the time, named Johnny, and he is found in the trunk of her car because she ran a red light. She's known to do like small petty theft. I mean, she's not like a squeaky clean woman, right? She is sort of a criminal, but not in a murdering sense.
I was going to say, like, I remember there's a scene in this movie where she's shoplifting.
Yes.
And I do remember that as a kid, but honestly, looking at her now, she's so obviously shoplifting.
Very obvious, especially with the security guard, and they have a metal detector. Clearly, they care about their store. She's just stealing so obviously.
On top of the man, right? She's literally on top of the guy, like the guy, the owner or something, or security guard in this store. And she's just like looking at him blatantly and like, damn.
Even like Loudon, who is there, he's so oblivious to everything that's happening around him. And like even the clothes she was wearing, oh, the clerk forgot to take the tags off of this. And she's like, oh, how about that? And I'm like, how does he, is he that rich that he just assumes that she didn't steal this stuff? Especially when he's already judging her for being a criminal in jail anyway.
100%. 100%. He, And I don't know if it's if you notice this too. I don't see their characters having chemistry on the surface. I feel like the actor Griffin Dune really brought the chemistry on his end. And I know that's what's part of the haha. It's official, like he's completely different than her. It's funny how these characters work together. For me, I believe it really was the acting on Griffin's part that made it for me. It made me believe that, okay, chemistry-wise. I don't know if you noticed something with the chemistry.
I did. I did notice something about that. So Griffin Dune, I don't know exactly how often he is referred to as the physical comedian, but he did a very good job in this movie, I thought. As far as the chemistry between them two, I want to say that they work together. I don't think two people like that would mesh well, but it also is a little bit of, I wouldn't say a plot hole, but something that they could have explained, because they do show him as someone who is very tight-whipped. He, you know, comes from a, you know, sort of a Silver Spoon background. We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know anything about him. But apparently he is not as sophisticated as you would believe, because So just to kind of track back, and I'll give an example. So like, first, I wonder what do you think Johnny looked like? Like, I always wondered who Johnny, we don't get to see Johnny. The only Johnny we get is this the back of him, and it's this animated like pencil drawing figure of a man, and then like a few little red smudges to indicate that he's been cut to pieces and put in a car. But like, I wonder what kind of guy Johnny looked like. Do you think he looked similar to Loudon, or do you think he was like a total opposite dude?
I would say leather jacket, maybe James Dean-esque, total New Yorker. With this character, totally like a greaser kind of person, motorcycle guy. That's who I see Nikki with. I don't see her with a scholar. I see her more with some kind of like maybe a mechanic, someone working with their hands in New York.
So she gets out of jail on parole, good behavior. She leaves, and this security guard who I guess was assigned to her sort of section, they have a thing. And she gets out of, you know, the police station, and she punches the security guard, but they don't bring her back in. They don't arrest her.
That was a funny line.
And they were like, you want her back in? And they're like, hell no. And I'm like, she gets out of for good behavior, but why don't they want her back? Like, what kind of woman was she in this movie?
I think that she was just so annoying to them. She seems like the type that would continuously just keep talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And I think they just want to stop. Like, she's an innocent in the sense that she's a sweet girl, but I think she doesn't realize that she's, you know, how she comes off loud and boisterous and, I'm hacking.
So to get back to your point, her and Loudon meet for the first time. I'm supposed to drive you to the bus station. Let's go. She gets in the car, manages to go into the driver's seat and drive, which I don't understand why the keys were in the car in the first place, but she drives off, right? And she's circling him, and he's like, okay, ha ha ha, funny, funny, you can park right here. But he doesn't. His sophisticated ass jumps into the car.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No one in his prestige would ever stoop so low as to hop in a car the way that he did. So clearly, I don't know if he is someone who has sort of a rich background. Maybe he's just a smart person that she met, and this is his way of like getting more into the business. You see that he something like that.
I think
right?
That's exactly what it is, because the father and the future father-in-law is clearly a very wealthy businessman. He's making him sign a prenup. Yes, which was hysterical, because in the prenup, he's flying through it, and there's like cartoons of diagrams of different sexual, even kissing that they can't do that are crossed out. That what I thought was very funny.
Yeah.
But I always took it as almost that he's marrying up into this family, and that's why he's so eager to impress the father-in-law. He wants to be part of the this business that the father-in-law has. He probably did come from some kind of, you know, well-off family, but I think he's more of a you know, he really wants to marry up into this family.
I guess to answer your question, then, you know, I think that there's a side of him that was awakened again, some kind of reminder of who he used to be, or maybe just that clear zest for life that she awakened in him is how I see it. So I think two people like them could mesh well, but hindsight, you look back, it wouldn't work at all. It's just weird. So I totally
I honestly see this movie aside, like, I like how it ends, but I see zero chemistry between them.
Well, maybe we just didn't get enough time with them together, I guess.
Think it's too much, like, there's too much fun stuff going on that's why it doesn't dive deeper into a more serious, you know, plot, because it's so, like, it's a fast-paced, fun movie, so it focuses more on explosions and laughs and action than development of them falling in love.
And this is what's hilarious, too, is that we're given, so aside from the fact that people can fall in love in one day in this movie, let's also make sure that he is engaged.
Oh, of course.
Getting married tomorrow. Yeah. So, I mean, love, nothing says love than breaking up a wedding between two people.
The day before the wedding.
Day before, right? I cannot stand that trope. I hate that trope. I don't know why they have to be committed to somebody in order to, like, oh my God, this love is for real, because it's breaking up. And then again, also with the fact that, you know, she obviously is not a clear match for him. It's just ridiculous. But I actually didn't mind her. What was her name? Wendy. I thought she was a nice gal. She's just kind of stuck up and rich. Like,
well, no, but did you, which I never noticed as a kid, aren't we meant to believe with the comment that she's been in everyone's cab, that she's basically cheating and having affairs with everybody, which I never noticed until now.
I don't know if that was during their relationship or before, but, you know, the fact that she takes, well, she wouldn't be riding in cabs, because she doesn't need to. So it's like, where is she meeting these men?
Yeah, what is the point? Like, what's the point of that plot? Because it's like three different occasions they mentioned that she was in the three different cab drivers' cabs, and they know where she lives. That's Wendy Blank's house. So yeah, what is that plot about? Like, because these were older men too. It's not like they were like these hot young, like the UPS. What's his name? The
Buck.
Yes. So that's just like a running joke that keeps happening.
I'm as a kid, I think I kind of understood the innuendo, but overall, like, I didn't really think too much about it because it just seems so far-fetched. But I
never noticed until now. And I'm like, wait, what?
What about the physical hijinks in this movie? Like, do you think they were funny, too funny? Was it just utter ridiculous? Did it take out some of the, you know, like the nostalgia of it all? Like, what do you think about, like, the physical comedy?
If it wasn't the cartoony atmosphere that you mentioned earlier, this movie, it just had to have this kind of action / slapstick comedy because it just adds to it. I don't think you could do anything else with this kind of movie. Like, if you went too serious with the action scenes, with the way the characters were, I don't think it was work. I feel like it has to be this. It has to be this or nothing. It has to be crazy like this.
I still love the physical comedy in this. And I think this is where Griffin Dune, like, shines even more. It's because Madonna keeps your eyes focused on her for most of this movie. But if you really pay attention to this guy and the things that he goes through to keep up with her and, you know, having to just be drawn into all of her drama, like his facial expressions, the way that he's so angry, but does it in a funny way. Like, he's so good at expressing frustration and anxiety that it just comes off so well.
Yes. That's why I think his acting really elevated this. I mean, let's face it. This was a way to get Madonna a movie. And at the time, this is the perfect way to do it. Her character and her acting is so over the top with this baby voice thing, too. I think Griffin's acting totally saved it. And I find him adorable in this movie. Really.
So somebody referred to her as Betty Boop.
100%. Even the drawing, even the in the cartoon.
But is it, would that be a bad thing? Was she she supposed to be like a natural New Yorker or
yes, when she said she was from Pennsylvania. I mean, famously Madonna moved to New York in the, you know, when she was younger and she took off and she had to do whatever she did in New York. To me, she came off as a New Yorker. Totally Betty Boop. I can totally see a 80s Madonna Betty Boop. Because Nikki is not a sexual character. She's not like a Madonna-esque character. Like, she's like a cute, innocent, oh my God, I was being shot at and I got faked and I want to clear my name and I got to buy my mother a present before I go back and see her because she thinks I'm shopping. But like, she's like this over-the-top crazy cute character. So yeah, Betty Boop, I could see.
So that was a New York accent over a New York accent you just did.
Yes, that's my over the top New York accent. That's my Madonna New York accent.
The title, Who's That Girl? Basically, it does sum up a lot of people in this film interacts with this woman who you clearly can't pin down. She all of a sudden has all of the skills of jack of all trades. Like, she can do anything. And I love the fact that she's very intelligent. She's very street smart, yeah. Right? And I do love that about her. She's super tough. She has great one-liners. I love her lines in this movie. I think she's very quick on her feet. She clearly has a clear plan about what it is that she wants to do. In this film, she has a key that was given to her before Johnny died, and it goes to a safety deposit box. She needs to figure out which bank has this box and also the box number. So the first plan, find the two goons and get the bank name and number. It's crazy to think that throughout that whole plan process, we learn that she is very good with animals because this... this Felis Concolor, this puma, hates everything and everyone and growls at everyone except for her. I mean, she literally reached in the cage and just petted him like it was nothing. I'm like, you could have gotten your like hand bitten off, but nope, fine, no big deal. Also, she has privilege up the wazoo. I just want to go into, again, one of my favorite scenes and probably one of the biggest physical comedy scenes that you'll see in this is that when she is driving, she goes to a mall first and she, you know, she's picking up new clothes and getting tapes and whatnot, but she's driving hysterically crazy. She's almost hitting people. She's driving over sidewalks and, you know, like dividers and stuff. And then she parks and takes up three spots.
Oh God. So terrible.
But no, but she has a street smart explanation for that. You know, park in a slant and so nobody scratches it. And she goes, with her Betty Boops. It was so funny. But they come from the mall and then they're like, you got to go to the bus stop. And she's like, can I drive? And he's like, no. Did you notice the puma was like growling every time he said no?
No, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he was like, no. You can't. And then he goes, and then
Murray.
Oh, yeah, it was Murray. That's right. And so Murray's just still grout. And then he goes, well, no tricks. Don't know. That means no car tricks. Just drive normally. She's like, I promise no tricks. And then she goes loud. And guess what? Tricks. And immediately she's damaging cars. She's damaging property. She's got a police car chasing her and she's still driving like a maniac.
Throughout the whole thing.
I don't know how she expected to get out of any of it, but like this movie seriously is very dangerous. So you would think back in the 80s that she had a lot of teenage followers. Being so blatant about stealing the cassette tapes and start doing all of this criminal act. Do you feel that it was dangerous for her to be doing that in this movie, or it's like whatever?
No, I could totally see it. I could especially in the 80s. I feel like there's certain teen, like, yep. Mm-hmm. Madonna's doing it. And it's the teens that are going to be wearing those skirts and the fishnet stockings with the leather jackets that are doing it too.
Well, I mean, but this cop approaches the car and she's joking with him, which makes her come off drunk.
Yeah, because I have to say, this is the highest, drunkest character without having anything without drinking and or drugs involved.
Yeah. And she's playing with the gun. Like, the gun is literally pointed to her face. She's sitting there poking at it and, like, messing around with the head of the gun. I'm like, what is happening right now? She's like, oh, my husband's having a heart attack. Is this the way? And she points to a dead end. That was so funny. That was really funny, though.
And I believe, you know what, the cop could see that he looks like he was having a heart attack. The Griffin, the character.
But the guy approaches him and manages to grab him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, today you could not do that. And that's the other thing. Does this movie work today? Is this a movie you can watch today? First of all, I don't think it would get made. It wouldn't get made.
Not at all.
And that doesn't say that it's a bad movie. This is just not a film for today's audience. There's no substance in this whatsoever. No. It is literally just a 90-minute funhouse. That's all it is.
It's a vehicle for Madonna to be Madonna at the height of her career.
This stuff you get away with in the 80s. You cannot get away with this stuff today. You just can't.
Which is sad because I feel like we would love like an Elvira 80s campy return to like 80s movies. They might try something like this, but no, I can't imagine anyone watching this besides people like us.
Yeah. But this movie also has her sort of defying gravity. There's a scene where
the rooftops. Oh my God.
The rooftop actually might be possible. I would never try it, but I think those gaps were actually close enough.
Yeah, they weren't too bad. Yeah, I wouldn't try them either, though. Nope, sorry.
I'm speaking of when they interview for the co-op and she's on the balcony and they go down to make a trade for the key for the, you know, the wife who's taken hostage at this point. And she, for some reason, manages to get to the ground, right? And remember, he comes out to the balcony and he's like, how in the hell did she get down there so quickly? And then all the other stuff, she finds the location where the cat was supposed to go to. And she's like, I have my methods. That's all she says.
Yeah, it's like a vehicle to just fill in the blanks that were just like, okay, in this world, she probably just whistled for the cat somehow and she heard a purr and she knew where it was. Like, it's over the top. Which is why it works. But can we also mention the key? Do you really think that she would have that key on herself in prison? Wouldn't they take that as part of her property before she got into the...
Okay, well, do you remember? So they're fighting with the two... Well, we'll call them the pimp and the fat man because that's how they're referred to in this movie. These goons
is... We killed the pimp and the fat man. Can we... Please.
These goons are literal 80s style. One of them is like super small and skinny while the other one is the gigantor. Like that's just how it always is. They're total opposites. Exactly. So no, they're wrestling and fighting with each other to retrieve the key said, get them to admit where the bank is. Like one of the pimp makes a comment. He was like, why does it matter what bank it is? Who knows where that key is? And she goes, honey, I never lost it. I've been sitting on this thing for 4 years.
Wait, does that mean it was?
Yes. That's what I took it as.
Okay. That solves the mystery of where the key was.
And his eyes bug out. Like what? You've been sitting on. So in the movie, we don't necessarily see any sign that she did this because she's wearing it on a chain. So she must have been allowed to have it at some point. I know it's so weird to think
about.
There
you go. That's how it's Madonna's. No explanation there.
One other scene that I want to bring up is the one you brought up earlier. Let's talk about the infamous suspender, no shirt style. And the hairy chest worked. I'm glad all of that was there. And okay, so she goes to Harlem to buy a gun, right? This is part of her plan.
To another bare-chested, suspender-wearing.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Harlem before?
Probably driven past it, but you know it does have that stigma even today.
Okay, so that was sort of my question. It's like, you know what Compton is for LA, it's like back in the 80s or maybe even today, places like that, locations are seen to be very dangerous, very homeless, very dirty. This is where we get the predominant amount of black actors in this film is all in Harlem. If they're not in Harlem, they're working for some rich white dude.
Especially in an 80s movie. It's such a stereotype. course.
It is. What do you think about sort of this take on Harlem? Like, they're not lying, but do you think that it was over-exaggerated? Do you feel like it was probably spot on at the time?
Well, I have to tell, in the 80s, do you remember Jason goes, like, takes Manhattan? I don't know. I mean, that's
Yes.
When you see New York in the 80s, like, that's Times Square. That is how I picture New York in the 80s. Honestly, Rudy Giuliani, when he was the mayor, up until when he was the mayor and cleaned up the streets, there was prostitution. It was like that. It was bad on parts of New York. So even in, like, main stretches, there was prostitutes and adult movies and things like that on, like, so... Yeah, so it's actually, like, a good representation, because even, I always say that, think of New York in the 80s was Jason walking down the dark alleys. That is what I remember as a kid, parts of New York looking like. So I will say it was scary until it was cleaned up. Like,
that's fair. That's fair. I'm not gonna, you know, drag, I'm not gonna drag this movie for its depiction of, you know, black characters or, you know.
But it was a cliche, of course. It's their way of also, yes, making it even more over the top, because it had that in the 80s, it was known for that. And it's an easy way of making a joke of, oh, this is where all the crime is happening in New York. So it is a cliche.
So who do you think the audience is for this movie? Is there an audience for this movie today, or is it only for those who caught the bus back in the day?
I do. Okay, so it's funny. Preparing for this, I watched a 1987 interview from England of kids reviewing this movie.
They actually did this? Why this movie?
It beats me.
Do you remember the date that this video was?
It's in 1987. It's in 1987. It was the year of the movie.
When it came out. Okay. What happened? Oh my God.
It was so funny. They were playing Who's That Girl, the song, and they had kids going into a theater, and as they're going in, they're handing them the programs that they used to give out at movie theaters, like gigantic, like, Who's That Girl's programs, Who's That Girl t-shirts. So evidently this was part of a promotion. But all of a sudden, they show all these kids in watching the movie, and this very serious 8-year-old boy is reviewing the film, and he says, I'm not really a fan of Madonna's music, but this was a great vehicle for... Like, it was so funny how he was talking. They were reviewing all of, like, these 8-year-old English girls and boys, and they were like... One girl said, I think I would watch it one more time, but after that, I think I would remember everything and not watch it ever again. But they loved it. They loved the roof scene, so kids really digged this movie, evidently, in 1987.
And, you know, I was going to make this leap that, you know, I couldn't have been the only kid to enjoy this. And I think it really has to do with how much fun she was having. Who, as a child, didn't want to do everything she did in this movie? I mean, from anywhere between driving the car the way she did to jumping off rooftops and hanging out with a puma. I mean, she had a puma for a pet. Like, this movie had everything a child would have wanted to be.
And I remember watching this clearly over and over over. And now I feel like it's unheard of. Where is this movie ever on anywhere?
It's never. Nowhere. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, kids today, we've gotten more into a more sensitive route. We are careful what we show our kids, all that stuff, influencing, all that jazz.
We turned out great.
Well, but I mean, I think that people who do like Madonna and maybe don't know her back in the day stuff, this would be such a eye opener for a lot of people to just be like, wow, she pulled that out of her ass. Cause like, she is very stoic now.
Oh yes. Yes. And she, I will say, talk about over editing. Like I mentioned earlier, my partner is a Madonna fanatic. So I've gone to see every Madonna tour she's had since we've been together. And I have to tell, even like if she releases a great tour, she over edits everything. She literally oversees everything that her tours are so edited that it is like literally flashes every second. There's not a like, you can't even just watch her singing a song like normal. It's edited so much now that she is like, it's unbelievable how much editing that she does and like how much things are calculated and put together.
Sounds like we're saying that there is a very niche fan base.
I still think
this.
Children would like this. I don't know if they would get the references because it is very 80s, but this is, I feel like, a child's movie or a hardcore Madonna fan. Or you have had to have it seen it as a child. I think those are the three things.
Are you super confident that you can recommend this to someone of age, like an adult? Like, you can go to be like, you need to watch Who's That Girl? This movie's hilarious. Or do you have to be very picky about who it is that you tell to watch this movie?
I honestly, I cannot think of one person in my life that would watch this movie.
And that's a little disappointing because I'm not saying this movie needs to be watched, but I don't see any harm in it. But I would hate for people to hate watch it. I don't think it could be. I think some people would definitely have fun with this, but I don't see this movie as a hate watch. I couldn't do it.
No, because you know why? Because it's so I know it deals with murder and this and that, but it's so innocent. It just wants to have fun.
Before we rate, I do want to bring up one other scene just to highlight some of the great stuff. Let's talk about when Loudon and Nikki are at Montgomery Bell's home and we get to see this crazy indoor rainforest. Yes, there is a rainforest in this movie. This is where the puma was to be delivered, Murray, to preserve their species because they said there was only four of them left in the world. And this is where they go to mate every 26 years. And this is where he's going. So they're at this rich estate and she's already there. And I don't know how much of women's wardrobe he has in that home, but let me just tell you how rich this man is. He has a butler who is somewhere lost in the west wing of his home, or he assumes that he is lost.
That's my favorite quote because he literally says, "I've lost my Elwood somewhere." That's the housekeeper. In the West Wing somewhere. Sometimes at night, I think I hear him crying. That was hysterical.
It's most distressing.
That was one of the best quotes in the movie to me. And this guy was in one scene.
I love Montgomery Bell so much. He is such a pimp. He's got this like Amazon looking young woman. He's amazing. But
she's like a cave woman. Is she living in this on the roof zoo? Like as some indigenous woman that just lives there in a caveman's woman's outfit?
I think at the point of this film, yes.
That is the answer.
So for sure.
She comes into frame and she's wearing a cavewoman outfit, does not say a word, just goes with her.
But she does sort of like meow a little bit. Like she's got her entrance is this rare, you know, like thing. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to think about this. I'm just going to move on. But he's having the time of his life.
That's part of Who's That Girl.
Madonna comes out in this Marilyn Monroe-esque sort of like 100%. Moment for her. She's got on this white gown. It's shoulderless. It's fucking gorgeous.
Okay. I wanted to ask you. Now, I do think Madonna is a beautiful woman. But I have to say, until that scene, there are parts of this movie that she does not look her best.
Well, I mean,
she doesn't look Madonna-esque. Like, I thought they would have her pimped to the nine, but there's some close-ups of her. And again, this is not talking about her looks or anything, but there are parts that do not flatter her. The makeup they did on her or something does not look like.
Well, I don't know if it was to overperform or, you know, undercut it, but maybe they just kind of made sure that you got like that cherry on top to like solidify.
Oh, right. This was the moment. Like this was her elevated moment that she could dress up and I'm not just a stupid broad that you think.
Yeah. She looked so good.
So he must have women's clothing because he has women that just live in his zoo on top of New York City with various animals that all coexist.
Yeah.
Oh, the gay cops?
Oh my God, I didn't even talk about the cops. Okay, so there are cops that are following her thinking that she clearly is going to go after the person that framed her or whoever that she was working with if she did do it.
There's a lot of what ifs in this movie. Yeah. If she goes to the bank, if she does this, like everyone's looking for her.
So yeah, the two cops that busted her 4 years ago is still continuing to follow her. At the very end, there's little hints, or they get their little sort of B plot that they are just annoyed with each other. One of them is very like rich, not rich, but like very sophisticated. He likes sort of the finer things, and the other one's very like blue collar, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so these butt heads, and they're not really getting along with each other, and they're like, I want to transfer, I don't want to work with you after this. And then all of a sudden at the end.
And one of them gets like a special. He's like, oh, I know you like this. Say, I bought you something. I put it on the side. Like there was some kind of.
Oh, yeah. Geez, it was a salad. And it was like Dijon dressing. And
yes. Mushrooms, yes.
And like, I got that for you. That was so, so cute. But all of a sudden at the end, they're in the car and they're like, come on now. What would I do without you? You know, I can't leave you. And then they glare at each other and just start making out.
I totally don't remember this.
Oh, I remember that clearly. It just didn't make any sense. But I didn't read it as them mocking gays or anything like that.
No, no. I think it's because of Madonna probably's influence.
Yeah. But I mean, it didn't really raise awareness for gays or anything like that. It was just a thing. They just
Just makes it look like we're sluts. We're making out with criminals in the back of our. No.
Well, if anything, this movie made cops look really bad. I mean, do you those four motorbike cops or the five?
Oh
motorbike,
my god! How that they literally just get knocked off their motorbikes, like.
Yeah, and they hop in a cab just to go chase women. Like, that was so weird. But like,
oh my
yeah.
god, the bridesmaids, yes, that were being driven around for 2 days straight, like with their legs hanging out of windows. And
yeah, yeah,
it's a fun movie. It's a fun movie.
How would you rate this today? What rating does this movie get for you?
If I had to rate it for someone such as ourselves, I'll give you two. I'll give you the average rating for the normal Joe in 2021, I could see them giving this a 2.5 out of a 5. Being a child of the 80s and a fan of movies such as this, I would give it a solid 3.5. Yeah. Like, 4 if I had to, just to save it from leaving your collection.
I know. Yes, I am thinking about if it's going to stay on the shelf.
Because if it's not on your shelf, it ain't on anyone else's. So you better keep it on there.
So here's the thing. This movie, to me, I feel is still rewatchable. Because it's one of those movies that doesn't have any huge major twists or an emotional impact. So it's not something that you won't have an issue reliving again. Meaning that if you did think it was funny before, it's still going to be funny now, you know? So this movie's rewatchable. I can't recommend this, unfortunately. This is a movie for me. It's for me. It's made for me. That's the way it is. And I am completely okay with that. And if there are fans of this movie out there besides me, then be proud of that because it's for you. The acting I thought was good. Was it brilliant? No. But I mean, I think everyone did exactly what they were supposed to. Right? Especially for how silly this movie is. I like Madonna's quirkiness and I loved her comedic timing, the way that she kind of said things.
Pee-wee Herman, like you said, 100%. Yeah. She was doing like a Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, her little, you know, cutesy, you know, teddy bear, you know, laughs and, you know, just sounds that would come out of her mouth. Like, I liked it all. As far as the writing, it's ridiculous, right? But compared to what? Like, what was this movie really supposed to be? And so they took, you know, a chance. It flopped. It's whatever. But this movie still kept my attention, you know, even though I could be on my phone or whatever, doing whatever, I can still watch it and still have a good time.
Yeah, this is the big moment. I'm ready. I'm ready to hear the rating.
It's a 3.5. Here's the thing. It would be a 4 if I, like, I love watching this movie, but I don't need it. I don't need to buy this. I really don't. When I bought this movie, I mean, this was clearly coming from someone who didn't really have much money to begin with. So I'm going to buy the movies that I absolutely love regardless. But today, I don't need this movie on my shelf.
I also want to add that Rob and I did come from the same generation. And that's why we both probably have huge DVD collections that we probably wouldn't have now. Because
exactly.
We were always under the impression that things were going to come out. And then they do go out of print. So.
Yeah.
But we never thought we were going to see these movies ever again. So we bought them.
I mean, that's the that's the whole point of this experiment. It's like, there is a lot of access to streaming now. And it's like, do I need all of these movies anymore? And I love watching this and I will forever be in a mood to watch this anytime, but do I need to own it? No. Is it accessible online? It is available on most streaming apps as low as $2, especially on YouTube. Yeah. I think that is super cheap for a movie that you can watch every couple of years.
And own it for $4.99 evidently.
Exactly. So like, yeah, 3.5. If I could recommend this movie to somebody, it would get a 4. Put it that way. But I can't. I don't know anyone who would want to watch this. Oh. Unfortunately, this does not stay on the shelf. It does get tossed in the bin. It's unfortunate, but here's the thing. I still love it. Still love it.
Yes, it is what it is. I'm so glad that we reviewed it because we will have this now as for people. Maybe someone will listen to this and want to watch the movie. That's what I hope will happen. Yes, and please let us know if you do, if you watch the movie after hearing this.
So real quick, Ryan, let's just rate the 4 songs on the soundtrack done by Madonna. We have Causing a Commotion, which is the opening number. We have Who's That Girl, which plays a couple of times. We also have Can't Stop, which was during the first driving scene between the two. And then we have The Look of Love, which I think is when Loudon was sulking in New York City.
It's the slow, sultry song of the album.
And gets challenged by the runaway jogger who just bumps into him for no reason.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of no reasons.
That's an East Coast thing. And that's like one of the, like, yeah, I could not. I wonder if that was even in the script and he just played it off, to be honest.
I guess Who's That Girl would be number one because it is a classic of Madonna's soundtrack, which 80s Madonna's is always on in this house. Causing a Commotion, because that is also a pretty well-known. If you're an 80s Madonna fan, Causing a Commotion is pretty well-known. Then I'll go to The Look of Love, although The Look of Love and Can't Stop, I would say, are interchangeable. They're both, like, they would be 3-4, 4-3, but definitely Who's That Girl number one, Causing a Commotion number two. What about you, Rob?
Even though Who's That Girl is the title of the movie and it is predominantly played more, I think Causing a Commotion stands out more to me. I just love that opening animated sequence and the song just, yeah, I would be singing that in my head more than Who's That Girl.
Who's that girl? Number one,
I know. Who's that girl? So yeah, Causing a Commotion, Who's That Girl? Then I would say, Can't Stop and Look of Love. But that is going to do it for our episode today. This movie did not make the shelf, but hopefully next month's film will. And we will see you next time. Ryan, thank you again for hosting with me. I appreciate it. I'm sure we'll see you back soon.
Thank you so much. I had a blast. Thank you. I would love it. I love this reviewing this movie again after all these years with you.
Yes. And remember, there are no such thing as guilty pleasure films. Fuck those haters and be proud of your taste. This is Movie Geek and Proud.
The character's name is Loudon?
Loudon. Loudon Trot.
Like Loud and Clear almost?
Yeah, Loudon. Yeah, that's how I would pronounce it. Loudon Trot. T-R-O-T-T. That's as how he spells it.